Welcome to Executive Tools. Don't put out the trash can fires. This cast answers these questions. What should I do about areas of my org that concern me? What do I do when I can't get everything done? What's my risk when there are known problems in my organization? Well, if you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Here we go.
Are you on the lookout for your next big opportunity? Ready to learn from the best to position yourself for success? The Executive Speaker Series is designed to help you do just that. Each month, seasoned executives from the Manager Tools community share their strategies for effective leadership, providing you with the insights and tools you need to recognize and seize the next opportunity in your career. This isn't just about gaining knowledge. It's about connecting with a network of leaders who can help you unlock new possibilities and guide you toward your next move. The Executive Speaker Series is available with our top-tiered paid licenses, starting at just $28.99 a month. Don't miss out on the chance to learn from top professionals and expand your network, all while preparing you for your next opportunity. Take action today and position yourself for success. Visit us online today at manager-tools.com/licenses.
One of the general things that we see out there is too many managers, I'd say the majority of managers, learn a very bad lesson as managers, trying to do everything.
Yeah.
And we're afraid to fail, right? Yep. So we mistakenly believe that if we drop any of the balls, like any of them, whether they're large or smalls, if we drop any of them that we're supposed to be juggling, we fail.
Yeah. And what's worse about that is we actually can justify it because too many bosses at all levels believe their job is to correct mistakes, to find errors, not to encourage effective future behavior. And as such, you get in trouble if anything's going wrong in your organization. If you've got 17 metrics and 16 of them are not just green, but bright green, and you've got one that's amber and maybe it would go red in a week, you could talk to about the amber one.
Yeah.
Right. And so our incentive structure, and this is all human behavior. I'm not talking about the organization systems. I'm talking about managers' behavior relative to their directs. And in this case, we're talking about directors talking to managers. What the manager hears about is problems. Yeah. Well, you know, the director says, well, I heard this went wrong. I heard that went wrong. Right. When things are going smooth, no, I don't have to do anything about that.
That's normal. Situation normal.
Yeah. And so to be fair, when we say managers are making the wrong decision and trying to do everything and they have 17 things to do and they're busy running around on stage spinning plates, they have justification for it. It's the stupid incentives, behavioral incentives put upon them by their bosses, their directors. And all managers figure out that you can't do everything, all 17 things well. So you choose to do all 17 things somewhat better than poorly.
Great standard, by the way.
Yeah, exactly.
Just better than poorly.
And yet it teaches a really dangerous thing. I mean, I actually have thought for some time, Mike, that this actually creates this intellectual weakness among managers, where they begin to believe that you can get in trouble for anything, so therefore nothing's important and everything's the same. We're simply avoiding punishment rather than avoiding failure rather than seeking success.
Yeah, and when people wonder why in our one-on-one model that 90% of one's feedback ought to be positive, we don't talk about it a lot, but this is one of the reasons, right?
Yes, exactly. You said our one-on-one model. You meant our feedback model, right?
Yeah, I meant feedback.
9-to-1 is the ratio that works. And part of that is systemically to change this kind of behavior. And if you're trying to do all 17 things and all you're doing is avoiding getting in trouble, you're not massing at the point of decision. You're not making a difference with the most important things.
Yeah. And as an executive, that's going to kill you.
Yeah, exactly. It'll get you fired. Exactly. It will. Right? Like, dude, yeah, you say you had this great visit by this senior executive, but you missed your numbers 3 weeks in a row. Do you not know there are three numbers you have to meet every week or every month, and you haven't met them for a couple of months? I mean, you can't tell me how these other things are going good or how HR gave you an award for, you know, highest engagement scores or something like that when you're not doing the right stuff. So anyway, we said this before, we'll say it again, we'll keep saying it, at least I'll keep saying it until I retire for the third time and final time. I should never say third and final because inevitably there'll be a fourth. Yeah. Yeah. Well, folks, Mike says that because Mike's favorite world in the future is me chained to my desk typing until my fingers bleed.
And what's wrong with that?
Exactly. What's wrong with that?
My fingers are fine.
What I was about to say was, which, by the way, actually is pretty good because even though most people think of retirement as something great, I really like my job. So I feel pretty retired. Nevertheless, I'll say it again. When you become an executive, your workload expands massively. The general rule is about triple. And by the way, as an aside, if your workload hasn't massively expanded, then you're probably not an executive. But if it expands massively and all you know how to do is, quote, get everything done, unquote, you're going to fail because the scope of an executive job is too much for the brute force approach.
Yeah, it's one of those S-curve type things, right?
Exactly. That's a great, yeah. I'm just reading a book, Charles Handy book, who's probably, among some thinkers, like the second most important management guy after Peter Drucker, which is a bit like saying that who's number two after, I don't know, Wayne Gretzky doesn't really matter. I don't particularly care for Mr. Handy. I think he's a very, very smart man, but he writes a lot of stuff that's not, in my opinion, helpful to managers at all. But he talks about having to make decisions. And it's surprisingly unscientific. And when I'm reading his stuff, I'm like, I'm not sure the average manager today or executive today could actually do that without losing his or her job. But your job is to decide. And if your job is to decide, that means deciding what to work on and what not to work on. And the fact is, your organization is human. Humans have some messiness associated with them. They are not ones and zeros. This is one of the reasons why Silicon Valley continues to try stupid organizational and human behavioral stuff. And then they finally figured out that, yes, we're modern organizations and we prefer our profit margins. And who wouldn't? At the same time, they're still dealing with humans and humans can be messy. Your organization is going to have raggedy edges. There are going to be problems in your organization. Things are going to happen. There's going to be little trash can fires. Now, we're not talking about dumpster fires. If you're in the UK, since Mr. Handy was from Ireland, those would be called skip fires, I think. And that's kind of weird. A dumpster over there is called a skip, but we won't go into the connection between skip level and skips. But we're not talking about dumpster fires. We're not talking about big things in your organization that are going wrong. But your organization is going to have some raggedy edges. Things aren't going to be perfect. Things aren't going to line up the right way. And you're supposed to not fix it.
What?
Yeah.
You're going to have to explain more.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, I thought that was enough. That was the shortest podcast we've ever done. Like
no.
7-8 minutes.
You hear that? That was me yanking on the chain.
That is good.
Get back to work.
Yeah. We've been doing this for 20 years, and that's the first time we've ever made that sound and associated it with Mark having his chain being yanked on. That's good.
It didn't sound right when it came out of my mouth, but it's the best I could do.
Best you could do. Well, you definitely made an impression. We'll talk later. Okay, so what's our outline? We've laid out the concept here. Well, so the first thing is, let's be clear, don't try to fix everything. And the second thing is, but you still do have to know what and where your problems are. But there's a difference between knowing what and where they are and trying to fix them, spending organizational time, money, and people's effort on fixing them. And in fact, this is something super important, understanding that there are problems and choosing not to work on them. That is, in a nutshell, in our experience, a distinction between maybe average managers and certainly average and poor executives and good ones or competent ones. They know what to work on. They choose the right things to work on. So don't try to fix everything. This is really kind of a fundamental truth. Your job is not to try to solve all your organization's problems. And you've got lots of problems. There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, when you think about it, your primary responsibility as an executive has nothing to do with the problems that exist within your organization. Executives are not supposed to focus on fixing problems. They're supposed to focus on delivering their part of the organization's strategic and tactical plans and deliverables. Your job is not to clean up your organization, folks. Your job is not to right-size every team. It's not to make sure your hardware inventories are accurate and current, even though you could get in trouble by somebody over in the PMO for not doing that, or somebody in finance or accounting. Your job is not to make sure that software licensing budgeting is all in order and maybe, you know, maybe we're over, maybe we're under, do we have the right number of seats and so on? What's the formula for that? Your job is not to smooth out pay differentials between people or solve everybody's concerns regarding what appears to be a pay discrepancy. It's not to help everybody in your organization succeed. In fact, thanks to the law of sub-optimization, frankly, some of your people, many of your people will feel like they haven't fully succeeded when your organization as a whole succeeds massively, because that's what the law of sub-optimization teaches us. If you want the unit to succeed, everybody has to choose to give up some of their individual accomplishment so that they can be aligned and help each other for the goal, the singular goal of the unit. Whereas if you let everybody individually do their own thing and feel accomplished, the organization will be sub-optimized, and you get paid to optimize the organization, not the individuals. You're not supposed to try to have all your IT development processes achieve capability maturity model level 5, CMM 5, right? It's not to make sure your team's metrics for PTO are satisfactory to HR. Not to make sure that everyone has a development plan that is approved by HR. I mean, development plans are good, but your job is not to satisfy HR. Nothing against HR. Nor are you supposed to include in your self-review that all of your performance reviews were in on time and your budgets, you followed all the processes correctly and so on. Look, all those things might end up happening while you're focusing on what you should be focused on. Lots of things happen while we don't ask them to or plan for them to happen. Sometimes the things that happen that are ancillary, tertiary, related outcomes of what we do are bad. And sometimes those things are good. And if good things happen, lucky you. And none of these things might happen while you're rightfully busy looking the other way, in the direction you should be looking, which is to say, to tomorrow, outside. I've been saying that to myself for the last 3 or 4 years as I've been thinking about executive tools. Tomorrow, outside, not today, inside. Your job is not to run a tight ship, nor is it to run a clean ship, or a ship that passes all the inspections. And there are plenty of staff agencies that want to staff parts, you know, HR and IT and finance and accounting and logistics and security and all kinds of stuff. They like making work for themselves and using their associated power. It's completely false, but people still assert it, that because they report to a VP, therefore somehow they outrank you, when in fact you're a line person and they're a staff person. They want you to have to do their work. It makes them feel powerful, but it does not serve the needs of the organization. If you pass every inspection you've got, getting high grades and everything, it's a sign you're spending too much time worrying about the inspection and not on your primary responsibilities. Inspections are inside and now, and your responsibilities are outside and tomorrow. And as we've said before, your only job as an executive is to deliver growing results while building future leaders.
Okay, now say that again, because I feel like we've just been waiting. Like, so what is my primary responsibility? Say it.
Mm. Yeah, that's good. We're talking about what it isn't, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of isn'ts. Yeah. There's only one is or two. Your only job as an executive is to deliver growing results while building future leaders for your organization.
Sounds like it's about the future.
Yeah, it is, really is, right? You can have growth now, but you need growth again, and you need growth again after that. That's why a lot of executives feel like they're a little bit hairy. They're a little bit like, this is a big job.
Yeah, you never win because it's always about the future. And the future can always be better.
That's right. And the future, you can't do the future today. You can prepare for it.
That's a tough job.
Yeah, that's why they pay more. So all that other stuff that we listed should not only no longer be on your radar, because maybe by now you've learned that it never should have been before either, right? If you're thinking about these kinds of issues and problems and inspections now, all that heroic effort you put into spinning plates as a manager infected you too much, and you haven't learned the transition to being an executive, the lesson of where your focus has to be. Your company promoted you, and no offense, they probably shouldn't have. And to some degree, they're complicit in that because you hadn't learned about delegation and focus yet, and now you're doing it again at a higher level where the stakes potentially show up in the media. If you're thinking that a tightly run ship where all the processes are aligned and calibrated, all the paperwork is complete, everyone has all the necessary certifications, if you think that that is what makes a ship that produces organizational success, it doesn't. It never has. Sometimes organizations that succeed have in them some of those finely tuned systems or processes. But that's an association and not a causation. And I would argue there's a deeper problem for some of us. It certainly happened to me early on years ago. And that is the reason you're focusing on the trash can fires is you don't have good solutions for tomorrow and outside. Because thinking about outside is harder. It's more complex. It's less knowable. You touch it in one place, it moves in someplace else. When you go focus on the trash can fire, you can put that out. You feel a sense of accomplishment. The trash can fires in your organization, the little things that are going wrong, the systems that don't quite work, and the problems with this, that, and the other thing, and the time it takes to hire people, so on, and the four or five people who won't go along with the new way of interviewing people, which is notably better, but they're old sticks in the mud. Focusing on fixing those things is your way of avoiding your real responsibility. It's like focusing on C task. It's the feeling people have of going through their email and deleting emails that aren't valuable or answering things quickly. It's not what you're paid to do. It makes you feel good. You get a little bit of serotonin in your brain when you accomplish a deletion of an email, but it's not what you're paid to do. And look, if you're the kind of person, and if you don't know and you have your DISC score in front of you, you'd probably be high C or a high S, who really likes everything kind of buttoned down, knowable, and you believe a perfectly tuned, perfect process is what creates perfect outcomes, you got it wrong. And you're going to have to change your mindset to become an effective executive. And as Winston Churchill once said, he who doesn't change his mind never changes anything.
Now, are you saying that those things, security and HR and accounting and all those things, are not important to anyone? Or just not important
no,
to
I'm not
you
saying
as an
that.
Executive?
No, I'm saying for organizational longevity, they are necessary, but not sufficient. Mm. You have to have them. You need a legal department, folks. You need some lawyers. You do. Okay? You need HR. And thank God for HR often. But the size of modern organizations, if you're in a $500 million organization or bigger, there is enough what technical people would call cruft that is necessary. You have to have it. It has to work. That it would be easy to manage all of that and essentially not look at the 900-pound gorilla.
Right.
Because wrestling the 900-pound gorilla is hard. You have to make decisions about the future, and you don't know what's going to happen. But if somebody says, hey, can you fix your hiring process? Sure. I mean, I can do that. But if you're spending anything more than 30 minutes once a week getting brief updates and making suggestions about improving your hiring process because other people are doing it for you, I mean, it's your guidance. This is what I believe a hiring process should be. Let's make it so. You're wasting valuable time. In fact, if you're really good at it, you could do that in 10 minutes and you'd have another 20 minutes to spend on the real work, or you could go home because you probably have a spouse and kids and family first after all.
Well, that's why developing leaders is so important, to take care of those other things.
Yeah. Look, if you do have some free minutes, and there's all kinds of ways to do that. And I know some people are going to say, hey, Mark, you said something about arranging free minutes to take care of the trash can files. And they're going to write me an email. And I'm going to go, no, I'm not going to answer that. But if you do have some free minutes, you can take some action against the little fires that are burning in the corners and the unfinished projects that are still technically active, but everybody knows is never going to be looked at again. But you are still wasting your time. But if it's not just you taking your eye off the real ball, because it's hard. We get it. It's hard to wrestle with why are we not growing or what do we need to do and so on. And choices, essentially, when you're talking about when there's risk associated with a decision, that means you could be wrong. And that's why spinning the 17 plates feels right, because it's relatively low risk. But unfortunately, it was low risk as a manager. It is now high risk as an executive.
I wish I had a fidget spinner.
Oh, exactly.
I would whirl it in front of the microphone, because it feels like a lot of some executives spend time with their fidget spinner.
They actually have. I've seen executives with, it just feels good to do that, right? It's smooth. It really runs. It's nicely. I just spin it and it goes around. It makes this really low susurration. And, it's really, really great.
My organization doesn't do that, but this is a little shot of cotton candy or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, basically, working to fix internal problems presents you with a knowable, definable set of circumstances entirely under your control that is much easier to address than a complex system of interrelated problems, many of which aren't technically under your control, many of which aren't under your control in any way, shape, or form, and will require collaboration and planning and compromise, even when the problems bear directly on the core of your org's strategic direction and primary project. So, look, you can hide your head, which is what you'll be seen as doing by more experienced directs. You can hide your head in your own org's internal sand and try to fix everything, or you can do the job of an executive, growing results and developing future leaders. Put your focus outside of your org and in the future, not inside, not now, tomorrow, and outside. Because no matter how perfectly you fix things, now will turn into then, and all things decay, and that problem will be taken over by something else, and you'll be waiting for the next problem. Ignore the problems. Ignore them, and focus on what you get paid for.
I can't do it.
Tomorrow, outside.
In January, people are feeling a renewed motivation and are open to career changes after the holidays. Don't leave your workforce unprepared for the prime time your company has to actively recruit new talent. If your team lacks a rigorous and reliable process for successfully evaluating new talent, we can help. Send Maggie an email to customerservice@manager-tools.com and ask her how soon we can come work with your team to ensure you're ready to hire when the moment strikes this year.
So somebody's listening, they're an executive, they have 100, 200, I don't know, 500 people in the organization. They got problems, like lots of problems all over.
Literally, they have humans. They got problems.
And they can't focus on that. So what should the executive be focused on?
Yeah, with that many, you have lots of problems. Even if you were constantly on the lookout and you had time to address them, the amount of problems would overwhelm even the most disciplined problem solver. But look, by telling you not to focus on your org's problems, let alone try to fix them, we're not recommending you don't know what and where they are, and that you have at least the germ of a plan for how to fix them. It's not your primary responsibility to fix the messes. And in every great success we've ever seen, we can tell you all the things that were wrong or the 5 or 20 small trash can fires that were burning all around. and they didn't get fixed and greatness still occurred. But we recognize there is some political risk here. You need to know what is happening, where it is happening, and you want your people to tell you. And by the way, you don't want to punish them for telling you because you're thinking about the future outside your org. Really, it's about the future. It's not about now and in. It's about then and out. You need to focus on that. But what you don't want to do is punish your people if they bring you problems and say, I don't want to hear that. I don't want to know that. That's not important to me. I'm worried about this. Don't do that. It's possible to do both. When somebody comes to you and says, we've got a problem over here, you can say, okay, good. In fact, I have a good friend who says, when people bring him problems and they say, well, I've got a problem, he says, good. Because at least we know the problem exists, right? It's better than not knowing about the problem. It's a funny way to think of good, but I love it. It's a classic example of training one's mind to think clearly about what one is doing and the various factors around it. Some material and the vast majority immaterial. But rather than punishing your people for bringing those things up to you, say, thank you, that's good. And you have to make a judgment call about whether it's a small trash can fire or a dumpster fire, different story. Okay, those can be seen from far away and will attract attention. But you can also say, great, thanks, we need to get around to that, and simply table it. And when your people say, you know, I bring you stuff every once in a while that are problems and we don't seem to be fixing them. And that's when you sit down and say, good, this is a lesson for you. We can't fix everything. I had a contractor at the house recently, a handyman, and he pointed out all the things were wrong with my house. He said, I mean, it's funny, people live in these houses and I could work on one house all year and never run out. By the time I finished, it'd be like painting the Golden Gate Bridge. As soon as you finish, you start again. I think it takes like 7 years to paint the Golden Gate Bridge, right? So we need to know about these things. So when somebody brings up a problem that isn't material, and in your opinion, by the way, in your opinion, you have to make a judgment call about whether or not that thing they're talking about, where there's a small trash can fire, is material or not. You thank them. Then tell them, hey, look, we'll talk about it. And then again, maybe it gets tabled. But tell them also, it's not a priority. And what you want them to do is come up with a rough plan for how to fix it. Don't spend more than 15 minutes thinking about the plan. If you can't come up with your plan in 15 minutes, don't spend hours researching it and so on. If you can't call 3 or 4 friends to help you, hey, have you ever had this problem before? Just send out an email to 10 of your friends. Hey, I'm dealing with this. Anybody know anything about it? If they don't, and you spend 15 to 20 minutes on it, bring it back to me. We'll come up with something. And then what we'll do is essentially table it, because I'm looking at all the things we have to do, and I think that is priority 18 or even 13 or even 10, but we only worry about the top 3 or 4 or 5 priorities here. That teaches them to notice things that aren't going well, to communicate about things that aren't going well. It protects you politically, because now when inadvertently it gets to somebody else who thinks they ought to be worried about the stuff going on in the organization, say, hey, I heard about this. Yeah, yeah, we got it. It's fine. Right? Make those people go away. Or if there's somebody in your chain of authority, you could say, yep, that's correct. I heard about that. Here's what the plan is. That's all they care about. They're not going to come back to you and check on the plan. They're not. They expect you to run your organization. They don't think they have to check on everything. Now, if 3 months later they say, hey, by the way, did we ever solve that thing with the thing? You'll have to say no. But the defense against the potential risk of that no is, look what I did here in the important stuff, the future stuff outside of the organization.
The advice here is not your secret weapon to not do anything and get away with it.
Yeah, exactly. And you have to be willing to take that risk, and you have to make a judgment call about what's important and what's not. And if you think small trash can fires are important, then you have no business having responsibility for more than one person in the world. And you just don't enact the plan that somebody came up with. And by the way, it's not a PowerPoint presentation. It's not a 3-page Word document. It's some notes in the person's notebook that says, I think there are 4 or 5 steps here. Here's what they are roughly. And they take a picture of that and they text it to you. And now you have a plan and it's documented as well. Your directs will learn how to fix things, how to think about things, but they also won't get lured away from the big thing or things you're doing by some problem that some people might think is interesting, at least in part because it's a C-level thing that takes away from having to think about the A-level thing, which is really gnarly and important. But all they would be doing is putting out a trash can fire.
Cool. And
that's not what you get paid to do.
So summarize that in 30 seconds.
This is 30 minutes of Peter Drucker saying, feed your opportunities and starve your problems. What that does is say the productive work is at the coal face. That's where the real work needs to be done. And if we don't have enough manpower, and if we're going to be profitable, we probably don't. We don't try to fix the trash can fires. Don't be distracted by problems you know you can solve and that will make your organization potentially run more smoothly or potentially pass some staff office's inspection. Keep your eyes on the important things. Develop a draft plan to put the fire out. And then as long as it's not material, don't spend any time putting it out. Focus on the goal. Tomorrow, outside. Focus, focus, focus. That's what great executives do.
Right on. Yeah, you summarize it with referring to Peter Drucker.
Yes.
I thought you were going to mention Napoleon, but maybe we'll leave that for another day.
No, we're going to do Napoleon. This is actually interesting you bring that up. This is actually part two. I decided to do part two first of the executive thing, but I'm not going to say what I've said. I actually mentioned it once in the cast, but I didn't relate it to Napoleon.
Okay.
But I'm assuming now after people, if you're listening religiously to executive tools, you know what I'm going to say. And I spend 30 to 40% of my time in my executive coaching talking about the companion cast to this one, which really is cast number one. Once you say cast number one, this one becomes sort of logical, but I wanted people to hear this one because there are a lot of people spend their time looking at trash can fires and still knowing that they should be doing
this. We should have a little contest. First one to send in an email that knows the title of the next,
yes,
the next cast, cast.
Yeah.
Get some kind of prize.
I like that a lot. Yeah.
All right, guys. Make sure you write Mark.
Yes.
Or write Michael at manager-tools.com. Let us know what you think.
Yep.
It's a bad contest because somebody's been listening a while. Should be obvious.
Yes.
But we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. We still like to hear from people. So
prove to us how smart you are.
Yeah.
All right, my friend.
Thanks, partner.
Thank you. So long, everyone. Have a great one.